This is Mark Rickard, and you're listening to Lee Williams.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. The taste of love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I fell for you like a child. Oh, but the fire went wild. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
I'm on the telephone line to Nashville talking to Mark Rickard, who wrote a book about his grandfather, who was Merle Kilgore. The book is called These Are My People, and it's loads of stories which you'll all hear about when I speak to Mark right now. So welcome, Mark.
I'm doing greatly, thanks.
No, good. Well, tell me all about it. I've read some of the book, and it's just intriguing because Merle, your granddad, was such a character, and he's just done everything in the music business and loved by everybody.
Yeah, he was, and you know, he had a lot of accomplishments in his life. He wrote great hits from Ring of Fire to Wolverton Mountain, and he managed Hank Williams Jr.'s career. So, but not only did he have a big career, he also had a lot of great stories. And I had the opportunity to sort of uncover those stories and record those stories because they were just too good to let fade. And so These Are My People is more of a collection of his personal stories, his interactions from guys like Hank Williams Sr. to Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Johnny Horton, and, of course, Hank Williams Jr.
Because one of the characters that you've got in the book is Tillman Franks.
Yes, that's right.
And I stayed with him for a week when he was managing David Houston some years ago down in Shreveport, and that was an interesting period, and he had some stories to tell.
Yeah, he sure did. I did have a chance to meet Tillman Franks shortly before he had passed away, and what a great guy. And you're right, that guy had incredible stories as well, and he also was with Johnny Horton there.
Sure.
For many years, which is when Merle and Tillman first met. And in fact, because of Tillman Franks, I think Wolverton Mountain really became a success because it was Tillman who had called my grandfather from Nashville and said, hey, why don't you come meet Claude King and bring a song? And Merle brought Wolverton Mountain, and Claude recorded that, and the rest is history.
They say don't go on Wolverton Mountain if you're looking for a wife. Cause Clifton Clowers has a pretty young daughter. He's mighty handy with a gun and a knife.
Her tender lips
are sweeter than honey, and Wolverton Mountain protects her there. The bears and the birds tell Clifton Clowers, if a stranger should enter there, all of my dreams are on Wolverton Mountain. I want his daughter for my wife. I'll take my chances and climb that mountain. Though Clifton Clowers, he might take my life.
Her tender lips
are sweeter than honey, and Wolverton Mountain protects her there. The bears and the birds tell Clifton Clowers, if a stranger should wander there, well, I'm going up on Wolverton Mountain. It's too lonesome down here below. It's just not right to hide his daughter from the one who loves her so.
Her tender lips
are sweeter than honey, and Wolverton Mountain protects her there. The bears and the birds tell Clifton Clowers, if a stranger should wander there. But I don't care about Clifton Clowers. I'm gonna climb up on his mountain. I'm gonna take the girl I love. I don't care about Clifton Clowers. I'm gonna climb up on that mountain, and I'll get the one I love. I don't care about Clifton Clowers.
Once again, the book is called These Are My People by Mark Rickert, and it's the story of Merle Kilgore. Is it available now?
It is. I think the best place to find it is Amazon.com. It's called These Are My People, the Merle Kilgore story.
I mean, surely you've only touched the surface with these stories. I'm sure there must be thousands of other stories that just never made the book.
The great Bill Anderson met my agent one day and said, you know, you couldn't write a book big enough to capture all the Merle Kilgore stories. And actually, I put that as a disclaimer in there because, you know, every time I meet somebody who knew my grandfather, they've got a great story to tell. And I think that's what it was like, just hanging around Merle. You had a story after the day was through. He made people laugh. He told great stories. He just had a good time with life. He laughed a lot, and he made other people laugh, too. And sure, he went through a lot, but you didn't always know it. You know, he knew the show business, the entertainment business. People want to laugh. People want to escape from the maudlin things in life. So I think he was always on.
Obviously, we don't want to talk about the stories that are in the book because we want the people to read that, but are there any other stories you can tell us that never made the book?
Yeah, I don't know. I think most of the stories that made the book, it was basically, I chose the stories that sort of showed a bigger picture of his life. Because when you're pulling all the stories together, you're trying to find a structure there as well, you know, so that the book has a beginning, middle, and an end, of course. And so those were basically the stories that made it into the book. So I would say most of them made it into it.
Yeah. Well, you must have some of your own stories of your granddad as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, I grew up with my grandfather, and when I was a kid, we called him Daddy Merle. He was bigger than life, and that name just really summed him up. And he would always come to Nashville and take us out to Toys R Us. He would take us to, you know, to places around town. He would tell us all his stories. And I remember, you know, just talking about Merle and being that bigger-than-life personality. I remember after high school graduation, he took me out and bought me some suits for my interview. And we went into a little diner there, sat down, and the waitress came up to me, and she said, "Is that guy famous?" And I said, "Yeah, he is." And, you know, the funny thing about Merle is, even if you didn't know who he was, you could just tell by his charisma and the way he looked that he had something going on with show business. You know, it was the spotlight. He carried it with him everywhere he went.
And the funeral that was held at the Ryman Auditorium was like a superstar's funeral, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it was a parade of stars there, from Kenny Chesney to, of course, Hank Jr. was there, and George Jones was there, and Winona Judd, and, you know, even Kid Rock was, you know, at my grandfather's funeral. And I always share that with people, and I just, you know, can't believe the how many people were attracted to him. You know, and it wasn't just the country music stars. It was the industry executives as well. When he died, you know, Nashville came to a halt that day, and they recognized him, and they did it well.
I mean, Hank Jr. must have been upset when he passed away, because he was so reliant on his career, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think it really hit him hard. In fact, I know so. You know, he had written Merle a poem, and he read it that day at the Ryman Auditorium. And the poem is actually in the book, too. A really cool poem, and it kind of just captures their life together, and all the years that they had spent together as a team, really. You know, Merle opened for Hank Jr. He was considered the longest opening act for many years for Hank Williams Jr. You know, he'd get out on the stage and he'd play a couple of songs. "We ain't gonna call him Junior anymore." Mm-hmm. And then he'd introduce him, "Hank Williams Jr." And, you know, he'd get this huge crowd of 20,000 people just roaring, revving him up like an engine. And so he was very important to Hank Jr.'s, you know, shows in those early years. And then he became the manager of Hank. And I think as soon as Merle took the mantle, as soon as he started working for Hank, he got Hank the recognition that Hank deserved in Nashville.
Country music singers have always been a real close family, but lately some of my kin folks have disowned a few others than me. I guess it's because I kind of changed my direction. Lord, I guess I went and broke their family tradition. They get on me, want to know, "Hank, why do you drink? Hank, why do you roll smoke? Why must you live out the songs that you wrote?" Tradition. So don't ask me, "Hank, why do you
wasn't he responsible for putting Hank Jr. on the road when he was 14?
Yeah, so the story is that Audrey called Merle at the radio station. Merle was a DJ, and Audrey Williams, who, of course, had been married to Hank Williams Sr. Some years, you know, 14 years earlier or so, she had been kind of tracking Merle throughout the years, and she called Merle one day at the radio station and said, "Hey, why don't you come to the house and having a pool party? Come out and listen to Hank Jr." Hank Jr. was only 14 at the time, but he could already sing. He could play the guitar. So Merle goes to the party, sits out by the swimming pool, and Audrey tells Hank to come over and plays. And Hank is just, at that time too, Hank had been studying his father, and a lot under Audrey's guidance there, that Hank Jr. learned all his father's songs, learned how to pitch his voice like his father. So in those early days, he could really mimic his father. And Merle heard Hank Jr. play, and he looked at Audrey and he said, "That boy is ready. Get him on the road." And Audrey said, "You know what, Merle? We'll put him on the road, but you got to go with him." And so Merle said, "Okay, I'm on." So he teamed up with Hank Jr. at 14 years old, and they started traveling and doing road shows. And, yeah, Merle was sort of there by his side the whole way.
So when was the time that Hank Jr. stopped being like his dad? You know, because obviously there was he changed his style and became an outlaw, really.
That's right. It was really around the time of his accident. He had been struggling with this sort of split identity, because his mother and the industry wanted Hank Jr. to play sort of exclusively his father's songs. That's what the audience came to see, was sort of Hank Williams reborn, you know, through his son. And then Hank Jr. started playing his own stuff, which had a lot of Southern rock influences and rock and roll influences. And it was just new stuff, and there was some negative reactions to that at first, and his mother even, you know, really kind of pushed back on that. She didn't want him to leave the path there that they knew was already a successful road. But Hank kept pushing, and I think what really turned Hank's career around was an accident. He was on Ajax Mountain in Montana. And he slid down the side of this mountain and really hurt himself. Terrible accident. Hurt his face very badly. Nearly killed him. And it was after that accident that nearly took his life. He survived it, of course. And mm-hmm. In that moment, he came back, and my grandfather was playing at a club somewhere in Nashville. And he said that Hank walked into the club, and at this point Merle thought that Hank Jr. was done, thought his career was done. Hank Jr. walks into the club, and of course he's got the sunglasses on and the beard now, and he says, "Merle, we're going to hit the road. You're coming with me, and we're going to do it my way this time." And that's when Hank turned his career, turned directions, and it was an overnight success, but it didn't take long before the world recognized that, hey, this guy means business, and his music was good. And what an artist, too. I mean, you know, as I explored all the artists in this book, again, this book is not just about Merle. It's about Elvis Presley, Johnny Horton, Webb Pierce. And I try to study each of those artists. And, you know, looking at Hank Williams Jr., I really grew an even greater appreciation for his music and his ability. I mean, the guy is fantastic.
Mark, it's been great talking to you, and I just suggest any country fan, go out and buy These Are My People by Mark Rickert.
And the story of Merle Kilgore.
And lots of artists that he was involved in, some great stories and some insights to country music you might never have ever heard before.
That's right. Well, Lee, thank you so much for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
And good luck with the book.
Thank you. This is Mark Rickert, and you're listening to Lee Williams.
Let me love you once more before we part. then forget me. Forget Nevada Smith. There is no room to hold love in my heart while I'm holding a gun in my hand. There are three men who took two lives. I swore someday they'd face Nevada Smith. I must find them, and when that day arrives, they may kill me, and then what will you do? Please don't hold me when I am leaving. Darling, kiss me once, then set me free. When the day breaks, we'll say one last goodbye. But while there is time, stay close to me. Once more before we part, then forget me, forget Nevada Smith. Maybe someday I'll hold love in my heart when I lay down this gun here in